Chapter 8. On the last day of combat's orientation, no one had resigned, and Piers came into practice with a raging fervor.
"I told Barclay I'd cut this flock by 5, he roared. "And yet you have all remained to spite me. Apparently your lot has a backbone. I intend to break it. No one leaves my class today until I have 5.
I exchanged nervous glances with Alex and Ella. We had all known this was coming. Piers had been growing increasingly upset as the week progressed, and today would be the accumulation of his wrath. We were not mistaken. Piers had teamed up with Master Cedric and his team of assisting mages to create the 4 most intensive hours of our time thus far. Instead of the traditional obstacle run around the stadium, we were led out to the mountainous terrain just east of the academy and the Western Sea. Today there was only one rule. Don't ask for help. There would be no healers. The only way we would receive treatment was if we withdrew. We'd had almost 2 months of training.
At this point, you either have what it takes or you resign.
The course had been designed for combat, but we were still expected to participate even if it wasn't our intended faction. Endurance and stamina were prerequisites for all lines of magic. Any student that chose to leave would never have made it far anyway. Now we were supposed to race up and down a treacherous trail dodging a random assault of castings. The constable's team had been invited to participate too. Only, unlike the last 6 days, they now lurked throughout the entire mountain, awaiting unsuspecting first years to engage. We were to reach a ravine that was only accessible by a long climb and descent a good hour or two in each direction. And of course, somewhere in the middle of that narrow valley was a chest filled with 100 copper tokens. There were 122 of us.
"You have not completed my course until you hand me your token," Piers warned.
He didn't tell us what would happen if we didn't, but it was clear that those without would be subject to some sort of horrific test. The kind that wouldn't end until he had gotten his 5 deserters, by whatever means necessary. There was no direct path to our destination, and it seemed that whichever way I turned, a new obstacle was waiting. The first route I tried seemed simple enough, until giant bolts of crackling lightning appeared out of nowhere. They struck the ground with frightening intensity, spawning a huge grass fire that rapidly spread. There were large barrels of sand nearby. I realized they were probably reminiscent of the barley sacks we'd been required to push and conjure the previous week, in aid to those that could exert the casting necessary to reap their benefits. Unfortunately, I knew from past experience it would be a futile effort. The bags were easily twice, if not 3 times, the weight of the sacks we'd used earlier on. And I'd been less than successful with those. I had no way of cutting a path across the flames. Ahead of me, some of the first years, including the prince, were conjuring up 2 of the barrels. They spilled a trail of sand across the fire. The flames nearest the group were immediately extinguished. I considered running after, but I held back. My choice was justified a minute later when a desperate boy shoved his way past in an attempt to utilize their opening. I stopped what I was doing to watch the chain of events unfold. One of the first years pointed. Eve whirled around and sent the surrounding sand flying so that Ralph was encased in a circle of hungry flames. The boy was trapped. Like me, Ralph did not have the magic necessary to conjure an escape. I turned away and started off after a group of first years to my left. A minute later, I heard Ralph cry out for Piers. 1 down, 4 to go. Maybe we wouldn't have to worry about those tokens after all. First years were starting to act merciless. It did not surprise me in the least that Darren's friends had been the first to lead the charge. The new path I took was more challenging than the last, and it was the one more traveled. I was following a horde of scrambling first years up the rocky side of a cliff. Many members of the constable's staff hid out behind boulders. I had to be doubly careful. The assisting mages were casting arrows as well. Eventually, our group reached a dead end. Before us was a raging stream, easily 20 feet across. Its waters were white, dangerous, and not particularly appealing. There was no other way to get around, It was immediately evident that if we were to continue our trek, we would have to cross the slippery logs and moss-covered stones to the other side. Like the fire and its barrels of sand, I recognized this challenge as another of Piers's makeshift obstacles. Only instead of a tightrope and shattered glass, we were now expected to cross a river. The commander and Master Cedric had stuck us in the middle of a real-life obstacle course. Cautiously, I started my way across, following the crowd of first-years in front. Seconds into my progress, a girl in front of me lost balance. She cast out her magic just in time, a long pole stuck out from the river to hold her in place. As I approached the same slippery rock, I reached out to grab her stake for extra support. It vanished. The girl laughed loudly. She was one of Priscilla's friends. I should have known better. I barely kept my balance, and I would have fallen if Alex hadn't caught my sleeve at just the right moment. Apparently, he'd been forced to take a deviation from his original route as well. "Thanks," I told my twin. His eyes were locked on the shore ahead.
"Thank me when it's over."
By the time we had crossed the stream, we were even further behind than when we had started. Another group of first years had passed, having used their combined magic to secure a long climbing rope atop an extremely tall pine in the distance.
"Rye, behind you!"
I spun just in time to conjure a defense against the downward swing of my attacker. It was the same servant I had faced during that first day of combat. Our staffs collided with a loud smack. The man rushed off, having lost any advantage now that the element of surprise was gone.
"That was close,"
I breathed as Alex grabbed my arm, dragging me forward.
"Come on," he panted. "We've got to get to the chest before all the tokens are gone."
I rushed after him, breathing heavily as we climbed the increasingly steep face of the bluff. We had just reached a level break when I caught sight of its clearing. Just beyond reach, a cluster of first years was engaged in a full-on assault with Darren and his friends. The non-heirs group was fewer in number, but it didn't seem to matter. I could see Darren throwing out blasts of howling wind, knocking his opponents to the ground with the sweep of a hand. In a matter of seconds, he had disarmed a large group and given his team an opening. Meanwhile, Jake and his burly brother William were conjuring daggers mid-air. The blades were quickly embedding themselves in the remaining rivals' limbs. It was a bloodbath. Alex and I didn't move, waiting instead for the prince's friends to finish their attacks and pass. I watched from a distance as they ended the skirmish and took inventory of their surroundings. They had just begun to move out when Darren turned around. His eyes met mine, and a shadow of a smile played out across his face. Moments later, the dirt-packed earth Alex and I were standing on began to quake. I jumped back, pulling my brother with me as the ground before us split open. In the place we had just been standing was a deep fissure, too wide to jump and too deep to climb. It effectively cut us off from the trail we needed to follow. When I looked back to Darren, he was gone.
"That pompous jerk just destroyed our chances," Alex burst out.
I bit back a scream of frustration. The non-heir had gone out of his way to do this. I had the distinct impression that if it had just been Alex, it would not have happened.
"We can still make it," I said finally. "We just need a running start."
"And break both legs in the process?"
Alex grabbed my arm.
"It's not worth it, Rye."
He motioned for us to turn around. I refused to budge.
"What is it?"
I stared at the gap, envisioning a thick fallen pine covering the hole. It would be bigger than anything I had ever attempted, but that didn't mean it couldn't work.
"I'm going to get us across," I told him. "Just make sure no one interrupts me."
Alex opened his mouth to protest and then thought better of it. He knew just as well as I how much time we would lose if we were forced to turn around again. He reached down to grab a jagged piece of loose granite and took a few steps down the path to keep watch for anyone who might pose a threat. I set to work, concentrating on my breathing until it became a slow, even pace. I willed myself to lose focus of the distractions around me. The buzzing of summer insects, the humidity of the sun's ever-present rays,
the dull and aching sensation of my limbs. Slowly, the distractions trickled away until all that was left was the image of a sturdy, robust pine, a mixture of textured amber and darkened wood. I breathed in the intoxicating scent of its sharp, resinous odor. I tasted the tang of its bitter needles. I heard the trunk land, thudding against the dense clay earth. I imagined it spreading across the length of our hole. Gingerly, I opened my eyes and saw the log that now covered the gap in front of us. Alex emitted a low whistle, returning to stand next to me.
"You've been holding out, Rye," he remarked.
I shook my head.
"I didn't even know I could."
Alex took a step forward, but I quickly cut him off.
"I don't want you to break your neck if this doesn't work."
Hesitantly, I put one foot forward, and then another, until both feet were firmly planted on the tree. I was still on the part that covered the ground. Now came the hard part. I took another step, testing my weight. The trunk felt stable enough, and the coarse bark seemed to hold me well enough in place. I quickly crossed the rest of the distance. An immense headache started to set in as I watched Alex follow suit. He was about 3/4 across when the casting gave out. Without warning, the dull ache in my forehead became a mad pounding. The trunk vanished. Alex fell forward, grasping at air. Crying out, I only just managed to catch my brother's hand before he was plunged into the shadowy abyss. I helped him off the ledge.
Close call,
my brother gasped. As the two of us stood, I apologized. I don't know what happened. My head felt like it was on fire. My stomach was reeling.
I've seen things like that before, Alex gasped. When someone tries to cast above their means.
The two of us hurried down the path. I tried to continue, ignoring the pain until it finally became too much. Ducking behind a bush, I spilled the contents of my stomach until there was nothing left. A sour odor filled my nose. I wiped my mouth against my sleeve, the headache instantly gone. Alex was waiting for me when I returned. He didn't ask, and I was grateful. We didn't encounter another first year for a while, but eventually we did make out another group in the distance. Ella was with them, descending the steep switchbacks below. I hadn't noticed her at first because she was so far ahead, but now I did, her black bangs and bronze skin glistening in the sun. I didn't see Darren's group below, so I could only assume they had taken another approach. A second later, I realized my mistake. There was a cluster of telltale green racing down the ravine much further on. I could see Darren leading his troop along a winding stream, gesturing to what was undoubtedly a large wooden chest at the edge of the river's fork. It was almost directly beneath the rocky ledge we stood now. Our best bet was to take the same path as everyone else, using the gradual round descent instead of a risky climb. With only two groups ahead, Alex and I still had a chance. I blinked and then swore as I noticed another company of students emerging from a hidden alcove at the bottom of the trail. They must have found a way to go around the overpass. There were about 12 or so in Darren's group, and this new horde easily accounted for 30. Add Ella's large group of 60, and that left a shortage of tokens. Somewhere behind us were bound to be 15 or so stragglers, but it was not enough. Alex and I needed to get ahead of the first years in Ella's group. Not all of them, but at least 10 to be safe. I couldn't be too certain of the numbers ahead.
We are in trouble.
I pointed to a steep slope to our left. We'll never catch up if we take the same route as everyone else. We were certain to catch up if we avoided the switchback and used the drop to cut straight down the mountainside instead.
You can't be serious.
Alex stared at the ledge.
That's easily 200 feet of granite.
I shook my head vehemently. I used to climb rocks all the time in Demshaw. You know that. I began to lower myself into the first foothold.
I can't follow you, Rye.
My brother had a crippling fear of heights. Don't worry, I told him. We only need one of us to reach that chest in time. I braced myself against the cliff's face. We can meet back at the first river crossing on return. If either of us gets a token, we can grab an extra for the other. For the next 30 minutes, I scaled the side of the cliff as if it were no more than a large boulder back home. My hands were cracked and bleeding from the constant friction of rapid flesh against the sharp edges of rock. But I didn't have time for a slow climb. I had no way of measuring my progress against the rest of the class. The stone wall blocked my view of the trail, and I could only hope I had made the right choice. In what seemed like forever, I finally reached its base. Sprinting over the scattered brush, I raced in the direction of a babbling stream. No more than a quarter mile out, I could see a crowd of first-years rushing back. Flashes of red and orange, telltale copper coins the size of my palm, glittered from tightly clenched fists. I shoved my way past the group, not caring to apologize as I made my way toward the chest. I ran the 2 minutes it took to reach its wooden coffer and snagged 2 medallions. There was still a large handful left.
"Well, well, the lowborn is a thief."
My elation broke as I came face to face with Priscilla. She had been missing from Darren's party earlier, I realized dimly. Judging from the gathering of others behind her, Priscilla must have been leading the large mass from the switchbacks. I quickly closed my hand around the 2 coins I had taken. I started to push past, but Priscilla shoved me forward.
"There's enough for both of us,"
I hissed, not wanting to draw attention. People would not take kindly to the fact that I had taken more than my share. Priscilla grabbed my wrist, and I jerked it away.
"She grabbed 2, Priscilla shrieked.
Angry faces filled my vision.
"It's for my brother. Does anyone think it is fair that she is trying to sabotage us?"
Priscilla demanded.
"No, I wasn't,"
I paled, nervously inching backward, only to find myself surrounded by the horde. Where was Ella, Alex, any of my friends from the study group? Anxiously, I scanned the crowd, but I could find no friendly faces. My friends had either already grabbed a token or were too far away to be of any help.
"Give us your tokens, Raya,"
I glowered at Priscilla, angry that she was playing the part of the people's savior, even though we both knew it was her furthest intention. Her only loyalty was to the prince. She was just using the students here in her personal vendetta against me. Our last encounter was coming back to slap me in the face. I should never have baited her. Out of the corner of my eye, I spotted Ruth and Jordan at the edge of the mob, but they both sadly shook their heads. There were too many others for them to come to my aid. The last thing anyone wanted to do was find themselves in the same position I was. I had no way out. If it had just been Priscilla, I would have tried to escape. She was more powerful than me, but I might have stood a chance were it 1-on-1. 20-on-1 was a whole other story.
"I'm sorry, Alex."
I tossed my brother's token to Priscilla.
"I said both coins."
"But I..."
"You should have thought about that before you got greedy."
The dark-haired beauty scanned the crowd, smiling maliciously.
"Does everyone agree Raya should pay the price for her crime?"
A unison of nods.
"This is ridiculous," I argued. "I have earned my..."
"You steal, you suffer the consequences. Give us the other coin, Raya."
Glaring, I hurled the 2nd copper at her.
"Now, does anyone want to help me make sure she doesn't get her hands on any more?"
Several hands shot up, and I froze.
"Wait,"
I argued.
"I gave you what you wanted."
She smirked.
"Really, Raya? You act as if we are doing this out of spite. Please understand we are only doing what we think is fair."
She stepped forward and snapped her fingers. Instantly, my hands were bound and a thick cloth strip muffled my cries. Priscilla took another step forward and leaned in close so that only I could hear her next words.
"Darren told me the truth about where the 2 of you go each night. You might try to play coy, but I know your end game.
If you ever come near my prince again, I'll make it my personal promise you don't last the year."
She glanced back at her volunteers.
"Now who wants to help me move her?"
I was tied up and bound to the base of a towering oak, a mere 15 paces from the wooden chest and its now empty contents. After Priscilla and her entourage left, there'd only been 5 medallions left. But in a matter of minutes, another grouping of first years had appeared, snatching the last of the tokens. I tried to cast myself free, figuring a couple of flames were all I needed to weaken the ropes. But there was no magic left. I had drained my powers crossing Darren's fissure. So there I was, tied to a tree with a giant piece of parchment above my head that read, "Hoarder." Thanks to the label, none of the passing first years had bothered to help, no doubt deciding it was not worth their time to try and help a girl who had enough enemies to tie her to a tree in the first place. After 10 more minutes passed, I spotted Ella and my brother. Unable to draw their attention through anything but muffled shouts, I waited for them to notice me. Ella was the first, interrupting Alex to point in my direction. They both came running to my aid. As soon as Alex read the sign above my head, he ran a hand through his messy locks, hanging his head. I pointed to the empty chest. Alex swore. Ella angrily hurled her dagger at the ground.
"We've got to head back,"
I coughed between huge gasps of air.
"Our only chance. Pierce said he and Cedric would keep everyone that didn't have a coin until he had his 5.
I stopped and pointed to the tunnel everyone had been using to return.
"There's only been one person to come through here since the chest emptied," I finished. "Which means there's still some others left. If we get back first, before the others without a token, maybe Pierce will go easier on us?"
"Well, it's better than hiking back up that mountain," Ella said, somewhat reluctantly. The three of us started towards the dark passageway. As we walked, I explained how I had ended up bound to a tree.
"Priscilla really does hate you," Ella observed. "That's the second time she's gone out of her way to torment you."
I winced as I tripped over a small rock, grabbing onto my friend's arm to keep from falling. "She thinks I am after Darren." Ella snorted, and my brother laughed loudly.
"My thoughts exactly."
After an hour of darkness, we finally reached the tunnel's end.
"Now that's more like it."
Alex raised his hands to the sky, bathing in the warm glow. Ella pointed to a sloping hill in the distance.
"We've still got to get up that thing and whatever else is out there."
She was right. 10 minutes later, a barrage of arrows came flying from our right.
"You just had to say it," Alex complained.
The three of us ducked and dodged, racing up the grassy slope. Eventually, we made it past the missiles range and continued, cautiously, down the other side of the hill. I could see a large crowd at its base. Instinctively, the three of us picked up speed. Sir Piers and Master Cedric stood waiting with the rest of the class. There was an ominous expression on their faces. A heavy burlap sack sat between them, glimmering with the copper tokens we had tried so hard to obtain. Piers twirled a coin in his hand, watching it spin and then falter, falling flat in his palm. He did this 2 more times and then glanced up at the class.
"The rest of you are dismissed."
Almost immediately, a flurry of students began to retreat.
"Not you, boy."
Pierce snatched the shoulder of a first year that had tried to escape unnoticed. He eyed Alex, Ella, and I.
"Don't even try,"
he warned. Master Cedric cleared his throat.
"Shall I?"
Pierce smiled, white teeth flashing.
"I insist."
Cedric reached out to touch Pierce's throat, leaning on tiptoe to reach the height of our brawny commander.
"Go ahead," he told Pierce.
Pierce cleared his throat.
"Attention, all remaining first years,"
his words screeched across the landscape. Several departing first years turned around to see what was happening.
"Anyone who has not handed me a token shall report to the starting point now. You have 5 minutes. Then your final test will begin. I've got 4 more spots to fill, so you had better pray to your gods that one of them is not you."
Cedric released his grip on Piers, and the commander turned to face the 4 of us that were already present.
"Rest up, children,"
he said.
"You might be here all night."
In the shortest 5 minutes known to man, the remaining first years made their appearance. Each one looked worse for wear than the last, and I was sorry to note Winifred among them. Once the final student arrived, Piers turned to Master Cedric.
Is Acilia ready?
One of the assisting mages stepped forward, a short blonde woman with twinkling violet eyes.
I am.
In her hands, she held a flask the size of her palm. Ella gripped my arm.
Whatever happens, don't let me be one of the four.
All right, children, gather round,
Piers barked. We came forward, and Master Cedric motioned for us to take a seat in the same circle we had assumed so many times before.
Is anyone familiar with the basics of hallucinogens?
Several of us looked around, but no one dared to speak. Acilia laughed and held her bottle high.
Well, the ones that aren't will certainly understand after they've had a taste of this.
She crossed the grass to the nearest first year and produced a small tasting cup from her pocket. She poured a little of the solution into the glass and indicated for the girl to swallow. She continued to do the same until each one of us had ingested the vile-tasting draft.
This potion is a powerful brew from some of our realm's most vision-inducing plants. Mandrake root and nightshade, to be exact. Distortive blends are what I was known for in my apprenticeship.
The woman beamed.
People say my castings enhance them in a way no other alchemy mage can. You'll begin to feel its effects after the first couple of minutes.
Master Cedric took Acilia's place in the center of the circle as she stepped to the side.
We administer drafts like these to prisoners of war. They are more effective than traditional methods in questioning. Soldiers are trained to withstand many things, but not a mental assault.
He cleared his throat uncomfortably.
We usually don't use this type of thing on students, as it can induce madness if left untreated for too long.
Sir Piers jumped in beside Master Cedric with a grin.
We usually don't, but good old Barclay has given us the go-ahead since this year's first years are more resilient than our usual batch of half-wits.
Master Cedric cleared his throat.
The dose we gave you should be enough to induce a nightmare state constructed entirely from your own projections. The hallucinations you experience will seem very, very real, and nothing, not even the knowledge that you are dreaming, will stop you from believing their effects. Acilia has worked her casting so that each of you will have a part of your subconscious reminding you of this fact and asking you to surrender.
And the moment you do, Cedric and I will administer the antidote,
Acilia interrupted.
Anything you say in the casting is spoken aloud. It's how we will be able to hear your submission.
She smiled toothily.
The first four of you to forfeit will be cured and sent to pack their bags immediately. The rest of you...
As Acilia continued to talk, I leaned in closer to listen, my head unusually heavy as I strained to catch her words. Her speech was choppy and quiet, a slow murmur punctuated by sharp consonants that hurt my ears. Moments went by, and my eyes started to itch. Sharp, glistening blades of summer grass became a dull, almost hazy green. The beginning of Acilia's casting? I glanced around the circle and saw similar effects occurring for others. Ella's pupils were dilated, so much so that they almost encompassed her entire retina. She looked more bug-like than human, and I wondered if it were really her or a vision. To her left, Alex sat staring intently at nothing, eyes just as wide, and a cold shiver crept down my spine. Everyone else seemed equally disturbed, vacant stares quickly filling the remainder of our circle. Dark tendrils of smoke enveloped my vision. I was blind. My hand began to twitch uncontrollably, and I felt unnaturally slaked for thirst. Where is everyone? I was alone. No longer on the field, I now stood in a room I had never seen before. The room was cold as ice. On each side of me, no matter where I turned, were giant, windowless openings. Just outside, a blood-orange sky was painted with magenta clouds, sitting bright against the harsh emptiness of my room. A cruel gust of icy wind greeted my bare face. Shivering, I raised my head to look about the room again. This time, there was a long black bench at its center, with three strangers and Master Barclay seated upon it. The strangers wore heavy mages' robes in the stark colors of Gerard's three factions of magic. I hastened to kneel, but my audience was too busy arguing to notice. I couldn't make out a word. I leaned in closer, but it was still impossible to hear.
"They are trying to decide if you are good enough."
I spun around, but couldn't find the speaker.
"I am standing right next to you."
I blinked, and Prince Darren appeared. He was no longer wearing the training attire of the academy. Instead, he was dressed like that first day I had passed him in the mountains.
"You are not good enough,"
the non-air continued.
"You know that, don't you?"
I opened my mouth to tell him he was wrong, but no sound came out. I gasped, clawing at my throat and looking to Darren with wild eyes. "Help
me,"
I mouthed. He threw back his head and laughed. I lunged at the prince, but all I grasped was air, and then cold, hard marble. Knees bruised, palms bloodied, I looked up to see the prince was now on the bench with the others. He winked at me as he whispered something in the black mage's ear, and the man laughed hoarsely.
"Don't trust him, and you can't get hurt."
Ella stood in front of me, dark ringlets billowing as she gazed down at me earnestly. I tried to assure her I never would, but I could only offer silence. Suddenly, the entire room spun, and I found myself outside my parents' house in Demshaw. Eagerly, I ran to the door and threw it open. An outpouring of smoke filled my lungs, and I coughed repeatedly. A hand over my nose as I felt along the wall, trying to see through the haze.
"Mother? Father?" I choked. "Alex? Derek?"
My voice was back, but it did no good. There was only silence to answer my call. Stumbling, I made my way forward, coughing and shouting as I pounded on the walls. I threw open my parents' bedroom door. The smoke suddenly cleared. In front of me were their bodies, mangled and bruised, spread out across the floor. A pool of blood lay at my parents' feet, and their eyes were glassy, without depth. I sank to the ground.
"Raya! Help me! Please! Raya!"
My heart dropped. "Alex!" I raced out of the room in search of my twin. I could hear both his and Derek's screams coming from across the hall. Pounding on locked doors, ignoring the suffocating smoke, I pleaded for them to answer. Barreling into the final room and finding it empty after the smoke had shifted, I felt hysteria rise within. Where were they? Who was doing this? I slammed my fist against a doorframe. "You are too late, Raya. They will be dead too, and there is nothing you can do to stop it." Halting, I turned slowly to find myself face to face with a stranger. The dim figure was shrouded in a heavy haze of smoke. It was impossible to make out any of her features.
"What did you do?"
I gasped. "You can end it all," the stranger insisted, ignoring my question. Her voice was unsympathetic and yet strangely familiar.
"You can end this right now and never lose them."
"I don't know what you are."
"Call out for Piers. This is a dream."
She was lying. This wasn't a dream. It couldn't be.
Could it?
The stranger snapped her fingers, and an image shimmered in the air. I could see myself seated in a giant circle, sobbing quietly, eyes shut, as Sir Piers paced the edge. He held three fingers up, laughing. The vision ended, and I was back with the stranger.
"Call Piers and surrender now," she commanded.
A blast of magic hit me, slamming me against the wall.
"No!"
I struggled to right myself. Even if she was telling me the truth, I didn't trust her.
"You fool!" the stranger raged. "You would rather lose your family than give up your chance at an apprenticeship."
"If this is only a dream, then I won't lose them." I folded my arms stubbornly. All at once, I found myself hanging across the ledge of an endless pit, suspended midair as the shadowy stranger looked down. Her magic was all that kept me from plummeting to its depths.
"Do you think you won't feel death? Do you think you'll be able to tell the difference when every inch of your corpse is screaming out for the pain to stop?"
the girl challenged. Still obscure in the shadows, Her voice rang with familiarity. These visions induce madness. You heard your instructor. How many times do you think you can die before you become mad as well? Are you so stubborn that you would rather lose yourself than give up a mage's robes? I remained silent. This is not a choice, Raya. Surrender now or I will kill you. You have 5 seconds. Please. 1. Why was it so important for me to fail? 2. Who are you? 3. Why? 4. I couldn't do it. Even though I was going to die, I couldn't call out for peers. I believed the stranger. I believed when she said I would feel every moment of it, but I couldn't do it. 5. Her cold eyes met mine, and a coursing shock tore through my body. The stranger was me. 5! The second Raya shrieked. A piercing clap filled the air, and I was falling into a long tunnel of darkness. I clapped my hands over my mouth, knowing I could never surrender. Wind whipped across my face, my limbs twisted and flailed as I continued to plummet into the shadowy abyss. My flesh was being ripped apart by an angry storm, my stomach was lost in my throat, and I was falling, falling, falling. I shut my eyes. So this is what it feels like to die.
Make it stop! Make it stop!
Startled by the clamor, I opened my eyes. I wasn't falling, dying, trapped in some bottomless pit. I was sitting on the grass beside my brother, Ella, and 19 other first years. Across from me, a red-haired boy was shaking violently. Like everyone else, his eyes were clouded. Moments later, he cried out again,
"Please, just make it end! I yield!"
I watched as Master Cedric came forward and had Sir Piers hold the first year in place, emptying the contents of a clear vial into the struggling boy's mouth. A second later, the boy was alert and hunched over the ground, heaving. Sir Piers turned to Master Cedric, who stood a couple paces away.
"Well, that makes number 4. 5 counting that boy at the start. I guess we can administer the antidote to the rest of them now."
He paused.
"Acilia, see to the rest."
The mages and Sir Piers began to make their rounds, slowly bringing each student back to consciousness. Acilia was the first to reach me. Her eyes widened.
"How did you?"
"I don't know."
"Did you even experience a state of delirium?"
I nodded and watched as Master Cedric joined her.
"She woke on her own, fully conscious,"
Acilia told the master, still staring.
"Her eyes aren't dilated, and she doesn't have any sign of residual effects."
"That is unusual," the master said softly, "but not impossible."
"How can this happen?"
Master Cedric finished his assessment and glanced at his assistant.
"Occasionally, we underestimate the potential of those around us."
He paused.
"I believe today is one of those days."
Her jaw dropped.
"You mean to say her magic did this?"
The master was silent for a moment, then,
"Perhaps